came to see Franklin, and it worked out. And the way I ended up in my house was just sort of a miracle. So I think I was meant to be here, and I absolutely love it. I love everything about the town.
This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 570 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Ariel Doggett. Ariel is currently the virtual program coordinator for the Franklin Senior Center. We talk about her transition to the virtual program coordination as COVID hit during 2020. We also talk about how Ariel evolved the programming during the pandemic. And now that the migration of the respite and supportive day programs is coming back to in-person, the migration is underway and targeted for September. The recording runs about 29 minutes. So let's listen to my conversation with Ariel. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, 102.9 on the local area dial and WFPR.FM anywhere on the internet. And today we're here with Ariel Doggett, who produces the email blast. She's been handling the kind of the virtual services during the pandemic. Ariel, thank you for taking some time today to help explain who's this Ariel. What is she doing?
Always a pleasure, Steve.
So let's start with kind of the basics. You're here. How did you get here? What's your Franklin story? How did you get here?
So my Franklin story, I was living year round in Nantucket, and I had two small kids. One was in kindergarten and my son was three. My son had a lot of medical issues. And when he went to transition into the special needs preschool, which I actually worked in, the SPED director said he wasn't going to go. And that just really rankled me as a parent and as a teacher. And I just realized Nantucket wasn't going to be a good place to raise kids. Mm-hmm. So I called a good friend of mine who was on the head of the teachers union. And I called a friend of my mom's who was in real estate. And I said, all right, this is what I'm looking for in a town. I said, I want family friendly and accessible, excellent schools. My daughter's accelerated. My son's going to need some assistance. And they independently came up with a list of their top five towns. And Franklin was on both of their lists. So I pulled open a map and said, where's Franklin? And
where,
I said,
hey, where is this good place?
No idea. I'd never heard of Franklin in my life. And I started looking at houses in the area and I was like, oh. And I came to see Franklin, and it worked out. And the way I ended up in my house was just sort of a miracle. So I think I was meant to be here, and I absolutely love it. I love everything about the town. Yeah. So, and the schools have been fantastic.
Yeah, it has. I mean, we had somewhat of a similar story, not so much school oriented, but we had already, both my wife and I grew up in Rhode Island. She was teaching there. I wasn't finding a full-time job. Found a full-time job in Jersey, had the nerve to take her with me, which took her away from her base of operations that she had had. And we moved a couple more times, and then the company had a chance to move us back to Massachusetts. And it was like, you'll move us home? Sure.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I was commuting into Boston. So, oh, there's a train line. So I checked a few other places and we did our due diligence, and Franklin was the best place. And we've been here for the 25 plus years, and kids are grown and out and now, and we're just going to find our next place to downsize eventually, but stick around at least here as much as we can.
Yeah, I love Franklin. I can't imagine living anywhere else. And I've got, my son is going to be entering his senior year. He's at Tri-County.
Okay.
My daughter is entering her junior year. She's at Montana State University. And she actually plans on coming back to Boston to do her master's for environmental law. So,
So out in Big Sky Country, she was still doing the environmental stuff. Yes.
Yeah. Really good place to do it out there. A lot of opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then clearly, as I think some folks are aware, and others are going to be gradually more so. And it was even a video I shared from Panther TV. One of the, I think it was a sophomore or junior, shared about the rising sea levels and the problems that it's going to pose for the Cape in particular. And clearly any of the shoreline communities, and we have an awful lot of shoreline in Massachusetts, rising sea levels are going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. I'm actually from Nantucket, and that is a massive concern on the island. There's been a lot of studies happening. There's a lot of talk about what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The erosion is really bad on certain sides of the island, whereas probably about 20 years ago, we lost almost all of our beach due to erosion, and then tide shifted or something happened, and now our beach is back and it's huge. But the other side of the island, you know, houses will fall off into the ocean. And
right.
It's right. A big concern.
Yeah, it's one thing that for those who have, and I've only dabbled here and there in kind of the geological wonder world that there is in terms of those studies, but the Earth is constantly remaking itself a little bit at a time. And, you know, in a day-to-day piece, you're not really going to see the changes, but every once in a while you notice, wait a minute, what happened?
Yeah, especially when a storm rolls in.
And big ones, yes.
Yeah, the damage that can be done to, you know, beachfront communities is massive.
And a recent Franklin resident I just interviewed, so I'll put the slight plug on that, but Don Wilding, who's been an author of Cape Cod history, did shipwrecks of Cape Cod. And it was staggering how many shipwrecks had occurred along that elbow before the canal came through because of the weather. And obviously the weather was still, lighthouses have moved, houses have moved. Some of the places they talk about, they don't exist anymore because the shoreline has completely changed.
That is true. It's all true. It's interesting to see it change. It was incredible to see the lighthouse move. They took Sankaty Lighthouse and actually backed it off the cliff because it was in danger of falling over. And that was quite a project.
I think, you know, I forget exactly where, but one of the Chatham lighthouses is no longer in Chatham. It's elsewhere. And the lifeguard station that had been in Chatham is now up in Provincetown.
Yeah.
And they were fortunate to have moved it at the time they did, because they moved it in, if I remember the calendar right, it was like the fall, so fourth quarter of 1977. And it was stored on a barge in Provincetown Harbor. The blizzard of 78 hit, for those who may remember, that was in February of 78. And we all, most New Englanders, remember it as a big snow blizzard. Out on the Cape, it was a tremendous, you know, waves, high tide, the moon was high.
Mm-hmm.
It destroyed the lifeguard station that was, this was supposed to go next to and be part of the historical exhibit that was growing. So the storm took one away and they had this one fortunately protected. So they put it in its place and you can still see it today, but thanks to the foresight, they moved it because it would have gone from where it was before too.
Yeah. And it's tough because you have to move things before they get too close to the edge. Otherwise the bluff isn't stable, or you risk doing more damage by moving a house than just letting it fall into the ocean.
So aside from Nantucket and you got here, you're doing an awful lot of virtual things, and that's how Franklin Matters question and answers came through the virtual channel. So that was one of the changes, certainly, as the senior center adapted to the pandemic and COVID.
It was. So when everything shut down, March 12th was actually the last day I run the supportive day program with another woman, Donna, and I'm the now I'm the virtual program coordinator, but I was running the respite program as well.
Right.
And those programs shut down. So, and we had no idea, like nobody did, how long we were going to be closed for, what we were going to be doing. So I'm very, very grateful. The senior center went to bat and said, we don't want to lose her as an employee. We need to shift her role around. So she's going to do virtual programming. So I learned all about Zoom. I had never used it before. I do have a background in television production, which never in a million years did I think I would be using again, but it came in very handy. And it started off kind of slowly. I was doing, you know, an email that went out mostly to the supportive day program people and the people that were involved in the companion care. And then it started growing. And then I realized this is going to last a long time. So let's start turning this into something that's going to be a source of entertainment and interest to people.
Mm-hmm.
So I started adding in sections on humor and exercise and things of interest. And then I was like, all right, well, I have an opportunity to actually do programming here. So one of the earlier ones I did last summer is my dad is the Middle Moors Conservation Ranger on Nantucket Island.
Right.
So I went to him and I was like, you know, Dad, why don't we do the cranberry bogs? So I videoed him doing a talk on the cranberry bogs, and then we had a Zoom meeting and he did question and answer, and it was great. So I started building in more and more programming. We did, you know, a supportive day group. We have pretty much anything you can imagine I've run on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
We have game shows that run. Name That Tune is one of my absolute favorites. We have a pretty big following for that, so we're actually continuing it. And then I think we're going to roll it over into live when we're back at the Senior Center. Everything's fully running.
Right.
Information, exercise, that, I mean, we're touring the Wang Theater tonight. We've gone on walks. We've just pretty much anything, and try to find stuff for everyone in the community, and then try to find some events that can tie in multi-generation. So, and then teaching people how to use Zoom, that was a big, big part. So now I can walk people through how to do things on Zoom without even being in their house. That's handy.
It is. It's a different skill set, and clearly the pandemic, while it's challenged us in so many ways, this is one I think of the silver linings, because we, to the extent that we Zoom is successful, and clearly it can't work for everything, but for a lot of things that you've alluded to, it can work, and people are now able to still connect, still do things. Even with the writers group, we came back into the Senior Center a couple of weeks ago. We had a bunch of people in the room, and one of the residents had been visiting family members in Colorado. She could still connect and be part of the writers group. And, you know, you can do that anywhere. As long as you've got good power, good connection, it works, you know?
Yeah. It was nice. We offered Friendsgiving. We realized that because of a lot of people couldn't travel, or it wasn't safe to be with your family, that there were a lot of seniors in particular that didn't have family.
Mm-hmm.
So we hosted a Friendsgiving, and we invited everyone in the community to come and join us. So we had young children and young couples with no kids and seniors and families and everybody, just for an hour of socialization. And it was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we offered memory cafes, which are music based.
Right.
And I was like, well, we're on Zoom. So I had someone from California perform, a gentleman from Canada. So
it expands the offering, because anybody, as long as they're willing on that side, can share the music through the network. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a great way to connect people and keep people social during that very, very isolating time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I tapped in once or twice to Quarantini on Tuesdays.
That's
meeting schedule allowed.
That's still running. We do Quarantini times on Tuesday. That's going to run through the summer. And then we're going to end it in August. We're doing movie and mocktails, a live event at the Senior Center.
Okay.
We're going to be showing Mamma Mia. We're going to have Greek themed foods. I'm going to be behind the bar mixing mocktails for people. So that's going to be kind of our transition. And then in July, I'm going to be hosting part of it from Nantucket too. So we'll have some ocean views and whatnot's going on.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Lots of goodness. And then after the summer, I'm assuming there's still some other transition as you move move from virtual to more in person.
There is. So for me, my role will be shifting back to my original position. So I'll be running the supportive day program again. Because we've been out for 16, 17 months now,
right.
It's basically like starting a new program.
Sure.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of members that won't be returning for various reasons. So we're building it from the ground up. And it's also a wonderful opportunity where if anything needs to change, we can do that now.
Yes.
But we require all new paperwork, all new assessments, all new doctor's notes, everything for every single member that comes in. I need to retrain all the staff. We all need our CPR training again. So, you know, in May, the end of May, we were told by the Board of Health that these two programs that I've run were still high risk. Don't worry about it. They're back burner. And then like a week and a half later, the governor announced basically COVID doesn't exist. It's a free for all, 100% open. And I was like, wait a minute here. It doesn't work that way in a supportive day program where you're like, just everyone come in. So there's a lot of legwork that needs to happen to make sure that it's done right. And then, you know, gosh forbid anything kicks back up, we want to have safety protocol already in place so that we can keep it running. So the goal is to reopen in September for those two programs. And it's so needed. I mean, unfortunately, so many supportive day programs closed, a bunch of them closed for good. So we have a population of people with, you know, mild to moderate memory loss that are living at home with their loved ones, and that's fine, but they need something to do during the day and need some support. There's nowhere for them to go. And that's the program that we run at the senior center. So
yeah, we'll probably have to do a separate one just to talk about that in advance of September, because I'm sure there's a whole lot of details we can get into a little bit more.
Yeah.
And not to tie up this conversation, we're certainly learning a lot here as well, but that would be a good help, I think, because that particular transition is going to be a challenge for sure. And did things suddenly change like a snap that all of a sudden it's gone? No, it's still here. I think we're fortunate. Most of us have, at least in Mass, have been vaccinated. Clearly we've seen around not a whole lot have in other parts. And the virus is still here. It's still running. So we're still in it. But, you know, if we do maintain at least some sense of protocols, you know, masked in some cases, I know the town, at least in the buildings, has added the UV filtering so that the air circulation improves and is going to be virus free on the recirculation. That certainly is a measure of comfort that we didn't have before. But there's no guarantee. There's still going to be a risk. So
there is, And there's always a risk, realistically, of being, you know, exposed to something and getting sick. But we'd like to make sure that we are as safe as possible. We do have the UV lighting was installed at the senior center. I believe they turned it on this past week. We also have the air cleaners, and those are spread throughout the building. We'll definitely have one in the room that I'm in. So, and those do a fantastic job of cleaning anything out of the air that's in there. So, and we will be going back with the expectation of no mask. So, which you'd have to be vaccinated, obviously, but.
Yeah. And that's always that tough call, because while the protocol says, if you haven't been vaccinated, you should be masked. How do you really check? Right. And that's the problem. So. You know, we're assuming they're going to be on their best behavior like we are, but you never know.
You never know. So it's going to be required. The supportive day program, we, you know, have some medical documentation that we're required to get from members before they can join. So,
right.
And people have been very forthright. If, you know, I run a program in hybrid, then I have to tell everyone the rules, and the rules were, you know, you wear a mask, and then it turned into if you're fully vaccinated, and I say, you know, I'm fully vaccinated, and then 99% of the time people volunteer, oh, I'm vaccinated too, or you know, I just had my second shot, and people have been good, and if they're uncomfortable, they wear a mask, and that's absolutely fine.
Right.
So, you know, we have low tolerance for people that are hassling others in general, so.
Right. Yeah. And then there's the other piece that, you know, while you and I are vaccinated, my wife is still at risk because of her illness. So I have to be careful, because in some cases I will definitely wear a mask just to protect her. I don't, heaven forbid, I want to come back in and give something to her. That's not good.
Exactly. Yeah. And I did that with my son, because, you know, before they lowered the age, he wasn't old enough to get vaccinated.
Sure.
He was coming with lung disease. So when this hit, it was, we did not leave the house. And then, you know, when I left the house, I mean, I should have probably worn a hazmat suit. I would have felt more comfortable, but, you know, just because it was a very, very large unknown for him, because
absolutely,
what had caused his illness was a respiratory virus. So this one was very scary for us.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're through it so far. Fingers crossed, hands washed, masks when needed. And we'll get through whatever else the future has for us as we continue to define the new normal.
Exactly. And looking forward to getting back to, you know, people, direct interaction and all that. Yeah. And Zoom is a wonderful tool. Very, very grateful for it. But I miss the physical hands-on seeing people in homes.
Yes. So. Yeah, I've been back to the Senior Center for the Writers Group. It's been good to see people. There were some people that I had only seen on Zoom at the Writers Group because I only joined last year. And to see them in real life, it's good. Absolutely. Yeah. And yet Zoom hasn't left. It still gives us that capability for people to connect from anywhere for that time.
It does. I have a fun story. I have a woman that attends a lot of my Zoom meetings. So obviously we don't have masks on when we're doing Zoom, and I did a hybrid. And so she came to the senior center. So I'd never met her in person before. And she walked in the door and I said, "Oh, are you so-and-so?" And she looked at me, she goes, "Yes, who are you?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm Ariel." And she looked at me and she goes, "You're Ariel?" So I, you know, pulled my mask down to show her my face. And she looked at me and she goes, "Oh my gosh," she goes, "you're so tall." So she had no idea who I was because she was not used to seeing me in person.
In Zoom, we're in the box. We have people have no idea how tall or short we are because we're sitting.
And you don't know from, you know, the shoulders down what anyone looks like or how tall they are.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. We won't go there where there's been others, you know, no pants and whatever.
Yeah, no, we don't need to go there. And if that's the case, just stay seated, please.
So are there additional programs you're coming? Obviously, you're going to be bringing the respite program back. Are there other programs coming back as well? Or are you going to, you know, any other morphing or adjustments coming know of? Because we may still be figuring those as we go, too.
Yeah, I know. I think we're still trying to get Tai Chi up and running. Another art class. We've got a woman that was interested in doing art. And that was one of the things people expressed interest in during the pandemic, is wanting to do more art. So we're going to continue that. Mm-hmm. Just more in-person stuff. We do have a Beatles tribute band that's going to be coming and playing in August. I'm very excited about that one. Just get people back in. But I think pretty much everything is up and running, and if not, it's in the works to get running. The only things that we were lacking were the people that were leading the programs that are no longer interested or able to run them.
Yep.
We're trying to find people to fill those spaces.
Okay.
And, you know, as always, if people are interested in a certain thing, to please let us know, because we're happy to try to find someone to provide a class for it if we know there's an interest.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit before we get those big parties back, though. I think, you know, the 200 people in the cafeteria kind of thing, I think that might be a waiting game for a bit, just to see.
Yeah, and I think the town is going cautiously as well. Clearly, the art walk, I think, was a perfect event. The weather cooperated generally. People were out and about. Walking a bit. I was walking around on Sunday, visiting the various storefronts and checking out the windows, went into a couple of them. That Friday at the farmer's market, it was packed, not just for the farmer's market, but this big puppet was there from the library that was tracking a whole lot of kids. And there was music on the bandstand. More of that's coming. I think every other week, Concerts on the Common will be after the farmer's market. And then the farmer's market, I think on those other weeks, will be using a grant to have music on their own during the farmer's market. So pretty much the way I've seen it, it should be like almost every week, there's either music at the farmer's market or music right after the farmer's market.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that, especially since on the town common, weather being good, we're going to be outside.
I'm really impressed with the farmer's market, and I love the new layout, the way it goes down and around the walkways.
Yes.
it's real nice opportunity to kind of walk around to really see everything. You don't feel crowded. There's so many people out. And the music was a great ad last week. I enjoyed it when I was standing in line waiting to buy my own stuff.
Sure. So,
and yep. a lot of new vendors, so to say.
Yeah, I think they're up to 30 something the last I saw. Not everyone are going to be there every time. Some are, right. You know, a couple of weeks and this week, that week, et cetera. But you know, more than 30, that's the most that I've ever think has ever been at the farmer's market. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And the variety from wine, certainly La Cantina is there. Birch Tree, I know you were in line. I was in line at different times. Birch Tree has a line. So be there early if you want the good stuff.
Definitely.
And the variety is just, you know, my wife ended up with a vase with some wonderful flower arrangement. It was just, you know, you can do a lot of things there.
Yeah, I try to buy something new from a vendor every time I go, and not this time or the time before. There was a maple syrup company, and they had whipped maple syrup. Oh my goodness, I am addicted to it. I bought a little jar. I will be buying the large jar this Friday when I go back. It is absolutely delicious. I asked how they made it. I figured it looks kind of like, you know, butter or something like that. And they said, no, they just whip the maple syrup until it's like a creamy consistency. And if you get, you know, a little bread from Birch Tree. Dangerous.
That can be deadly.
It can. Either that or you end up at the little shop of olive oils and you get some of their balsamic vinaigrette, and that's dangerous too.
Paired with Birch Tree, of course.
Yes, yeah. I know their olive oils are amazing and their balsamic. I'm going to do a plug for the Black Mission Fig balsamic.
Okay.
It is so good over tomatoes and mozzarella.
Well, and the combination of fig and the sweetness and the balsamic with the kind of the bitterness, that combo, that sounds good. Yeah. And there are interesting combos, you know, with different vinaigrettes, et cetera. Yeah. It's just.
Oh, the cinnamon pear vinaigrette.
Cinnamon That's pear. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah, great. Now I'm hungry, Steve.
And we got a long time to wait for dinner.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow's Friday, so I'm going to go hit the bank first and then...
And then hit the market.
Hit the market, yeah. And I told a bunch of the vendors, I said, I'm going to bring a stack of ones so I can pay, because everyone always pays with 20s and they have issues.
They have trouble with change. Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a big stack of ones and pay for everything and get strange looks, but that's it.
Buying local, shopping local, eating healthy too. So there's nothing wrong with that part. Yes, definitely. Well, this has been pleasant having this conversation, finding out a little bit more about you and finding about what's coming to the senior center as things continue to evolve and as we get into this new normal. So thank you for taking some time today. And yes, we'll definitely have to schedule time for when you get the respite program and back, getting to get back and all the protocols. We can spend more time on that because I think that'll be a good episode for people, and should help you, because then you can say it here and then tell the people, oh, go listen to this, and we'll have the podcast version available. So you'll be able to explain all the details.
That would be wonderful, because I found that a bunch of people don't really know about the program or don't think they qualify for it, and they do, and especially the respite program, to have somebody come into your house as a caregiver so that you can go run errands or get a haircut and know that your loved one's okay.
Right.
Kind of an invaluable resource.
Yeah, I've been picking up through the grapevine here and there different needs of people in similar status where, based on the change in circumstances, maybe whatever's going on in their personal life, now they're doing some of that care and they're finding it a chore. It's a challenge, and absolutely, you know, so wherever there is help, let's share this. Let's help the folks.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and chat with you.
Absolutely. We'll enjoy it and share it, and we'll come back for a round two.
Perfect. That sounds great. Well, I will look forward to seeing you at the farmer's market tomorrow.
Excellent. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.